Welcome to Movie Maniacs, Mike Rags and Chuck Curry discussing the greatest movies of all time and all the new films in theaters and streaming that you need to know about. Like us, rate us, share us. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Rags and Chuck Curry.
All right, we're back with another edition of Movie Maniacs. Welcome aboard. If you found us on WoW 1190 and 107.5 FM, thank you. And of course, listening to our podcast, make sure you rate and review us, share us, tell all your friends about us, because it's a heck of a lot of fun as we go through the greatest movies of all time and talk about the newer movies that, well, frankly, are trying to come out. And movie theaters have been open. Chuck and I are going to talk about the latest in movie theaters as well. And let's bring him in. Chuck Curry, how are you? Now, you run a movie theater. Has the attendance spiked at all yet?
No.
Is there one movie people are coming to see at least?
If it was a stock, we consider bankruptcy.
Wow.
It's not good. I mean, literally, there is no real there's no follow through. Tenants in its second week, and we're getting like five a night for one
and
show.
I get the sense in the industry too, Chuck. Is that the light is getting dimmer, not brighter, as far as what side of the tunnel we're coming out of here with.
I agree. And here's the thing. I said last week, I think what Warner Brothers did with Chris Nolan's Tenet is they took one for the industry, took one for the team. They said, let's give this a shot, see what happens. They have to do a certain amount of international numbers. The film's done $207 million worldwide. From what I read, and the equation I always use in my head is a $200 million film has to make $500 million worldwide just to break even. May not do that. So it's unlikely you're going to get Wonder Woman 84 or Bond or A Quiet Place 2 to jump in that cold pond to take that chance. Now, I do think there's a possibility movie like Death on the Nile, which is a Disney film because it was 20th Century Fox, they bought it. Mm-hmm. It appears they might release that in November because they're releasing new stills, starting to slowly market it a little bit. Disney seems to be more gung-ho on taking shots than the other studios. The other studios seem much more petrified, and I don't blame them. And it's sort of it's a little depressing. We talk about the same thing week after week, but that is a story in the industry. It's when will the industry get back to some sense of normalcy? And without a vaccine, without the psychology changing, people are not going to sit elbow to elbow in a movie theater, Mike. They're just it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and this weekend, I mean, they're carting out the Broken Hearts Club, the Broken Hearts Gallery. Nobody's going to go see that movie. And Antebellum went VOD,
right?
Not even in theaters. That was supposed to be a pretty big movie back in the spring, Chuck, if you remember.
I do.
They were liking it to Get Out and that, and they're trying to get some buzz marketing-wise for that. And now I don't see the Gerard Butler movie on the docket anymore in the next couple weeks, Chuck. It looks like they're staying away until October 9th when Honest Thief comes out. That's the next Liam Neeson action thriller.
Okay. And what do you think of that trailer? It's sort of if you like Liam Neeson doing that thing.
It's definitely Liam Neeson
looks
doing
effective.
That thing. Yeah.
Those movies, they could take shots. They could afford to take the shot because they're what they call, middling budget. I don't know what the budget is. They spent maybe $25-30 million. They could get some of that money back on streaming, even if they have to take a little bit of a loss. I think they're going to accept that to a certain extent. They're not going to accept a loss on Wonder Woman or Bond. There's no way. Those are billion-dollar grossing worldwide movies. They're not. They'll hold them for a long time.
And that thriller with Gerard Butler, news came out this week, supposed to come out September 25th. Now they're just, it's undisclosed date in 2020 it's going to get released. So even that movie like that got a little gun-shy too, Chuck. So
what do you do? Let me ask you a question. If you looked at the news last week, right, I read an article, Dr. Fauci said, to take this any way you want, but Dr. Fauci says he doesn't think movie theaters – we'll get back to normal till very late 2021. Let's just say he's right.
Right.
Okay. What do movie theaters do? I'm not talking about the studios. What do they do? How could they survive? If we don't see normalcy till Christmas 2021, how could independent theaters hold out? How could even major chains? It's going to be
they can't
devastating.
I think the one light at the end of the tunnel is what I told you last week in a text. I said that what is going to eventually happen is goodbye multiplexes and a back and a return to the single house, single theater houses that, you know, you'll have a line around the block.
Why do you think that way? Tell me.
Because I just don't think you're going to get, even when things are back to normal, I don't think you're going to get enough people comfortable enough to go into a movie theater. So if you want to survive as a movie theater industry, you got to strip. You got to take theaters. You got to take screens down. You got to get maybe two theaters tops in per house and limit the amount of screen play, you know, the screen time. I really think that's the only way to go.
It's going to cause a riff in the real estate market. No.
Well, the real estate markets are already shot to death anyway. Commercial real estate's dead anyway.
Well, not really. I mean, it's probably like I'm in the Poconos, veering off subject, but it is interesting. People are flocking up here, buying houses and renting apartments.
Yeah, that's not commercial real estate, though. Commercial real estate.
Oh, I got you.
I'm talking about residential.
Nobody's going
to the office anymore. So the big office buildings are done, and these big strip malls are going to be done as well. I just don't – nobody knows, Chuck. It's hard to predict. But these movies that we talk about, they're eventually going to have to be released in 2021, whether it's the first quarter.
They will. I agree with that. They can't hold it later than that.
You know, maybe AMC just bites the bullet and stays the course and eats a lot of money and stays open and plays what they can play. But sooner or later, you know, there's only so many times you can go see Jurassic Park and Empire Strikes Back.
They're not going to support the industry.
No.
I mean, I love that stuff, but come on. It's not going to happen.
Well, I also found interesting news, too, and I didn't know about it until Bill Maher. I was watching him last night. The Academy Awards just can't get out of their own way. So according to a report last week, the Academy Awards are now going to have a criteria as to what type of movie is going to be even considered for Best Picture, and you have to hit certain benchmarks, i.e. A diverse cast, you know, subject matter.
What do you think?
They've been tone deaf for the last 10 years because that's what Hollywood's doing anyway. The movies like Moonlight and Green Book, I mean, in normal years, they wouldn't even be considered best.
Well, I like Green Book a lot. Moonlight,
I know you do, but you know what I'm saying.
Moonlight, no. There's no way that should have won an Oscar for Best Picture.
It really should be Most Woke Movie Award, and that's what it is. That's what it's become. So to even put a tighter criteria on what gets considered, it's an absolute joke.
Well, I think once you give ultimatums and criterias, it just doesn't feel right.
Well, then they should also read the room too, Chuck, because if they keep doing stuff like this, nobody's watching the award ceremony anyway. It's going to be less watched, and sooner or later it's going to be on YouTube.
They plan on having some sort of Oscar ceremony in April of 2021 for movies that came out in 2020. I know there's some Oscar bait projects that are playing at film festivals, I guess virtual, and it doesn't feel like it. I don't know how the heck they could do it.
I don't know how they're going to do one this year because, frankly, how many movies can they pick from? I mean, there's just haven't been.
I guess there's a certain amount that are ready to go.
I don't know.
Again,
if they don't watch themselves, they've already alienated 70% of mainstream audiences from watching it, Chuck, just from what they're doing and how they're doing it. God bless them. I want everybody. I want equal rights. I want,
I want
racism gone and all that stuff. But let's face it. They're playing to their own crowd. They're not converting anybody with these movies by saying, oh, you know, I'm not going to be racist now because I saw Moonlight. People who are racist are not seeing Moonlight. I'm sorry. So you don't have to have a set criterion. What Hollywood on creativity? You're telling people how to be creative. It's an absolute joke, and it's going to fail miserably.
Well, what you're doing is you're telling casting directors how to cast based on
right
nationality and skin color.
Not only that, you're telling screenwriters
it feels weird, it's
a joke, and hopefully it's an experimental idea that's going to go by the wayside. By the way, Stanley Cup playoffs get started Saturday night. I did forget to bring up the topic. Chuck and I are going to discuss our winter sports ice movies later on. Some fun titles Chuck and I can banter about that we probably haven't talked about quite some times, but you'd be surprised how many movies take place on ice or in the snow, sports movies wise. So Chuck and I will get to that. Let's hop on some movie news real quick. It looks like Robert Pattinson's back on set and Batman's getting filmed again, Chuck.
I saw that. So he survived COVID. Good.
He did. But you know, who knows what could happen next. Scream 5 set to begin production later this month. By the way, Did you see the documentary movie coming out about David Arquette and wrestling? Did you see this?
I did not. I know he's heavily involved. I know his background. I don't know how seriously he took it. I know he's gotten injured. I know he's fought in wrestling matches that were basically not staged also.
Yes.
And he took severe beating.
And by the way, he's the villain in most of these matches too, from what I understand.
Okay.
But there's a documentary. I believe it's called You Cannot Kill David Arquette or something like that. And it's about his dream.
I'll watch.
Fulfilled his dream. Speaking of watching things.
Why is that his dream?
Have you watched anything?
No. I'll be watching October 4th when The Walking Dead season final airs, Mike.
Will they wear masks?
I just want to point out The Walking Dead. Did we talk about it last week where AMC announced that they're going to put an end to its Walking Dead TV show? After next year, they're going to do – well, it's going to do 24 episodes, 12 and 12. So it's got two more years, theoretically. And they're not going to end the show because they're going to take Daryl and Carol characters and spin them off into their own show in the same universe. So really, they're just rebranding it. And they're going to have other Walking Dead series going on. So if you're a fan of Walking Dead, no worries.
Okay.
And you're not.
I don't watch it to be a
Why?
Fan. Or not? I don't know. You know me.
Before the year's over, you got to stop binging.
There's
you got
too much. Just
nah.
Too much.
You'll do. You'll. It's worth it. Believe me.
Also, news that Chuck won't care about. It looks like Hotel Transylvania 4
is set
to come out next year. Selena Gomez is back, and she's
really?
Going to help produce that movie.
I'm
and
excited.
You know, I brought up Empire Strikes Back in its 40th anniversary. Next weekend, they will put that movie back on the big screen, Chuck, and
it's been on it. We booked it at our theater.
Well, I think you're going to see it more
everywhere,
wide.
Oh, in the multiplexes.
Okay. Multiplexes. So,
all right.
You know, it's the best of the bunch. It's the greatest of all time. Or you could just watch it in 4K on Disney Plus, which I might do later on. By the way, big night in the Rags' household tonight, Chuck.
Really?
My daughter, who's 10.
Yeah.
Gonna watch Poltergeist for the first time.
Cool.
So I'm introducing her to that. She just breezed through all three seasons of Stranger Things, and now has opened herself up a little bit.
I want to ask you a question here. I'm putting together an outdoor screening. You know where Shawnee is, right? In the Poconos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're gonna do like a drive-in experience. I'm testing it next Monday. We're gonna do a double feature on October 24th. First one's gonna be 7:00. We're gonna do a family one for Halloween. We're gonna do Casper.
Good one.
All right, from 95.
Good one.
Bill Pullman, Christina Ricci. It's fun.
Yeah.
And then at 9:30, we're gonna do most likely John Carpenter's Halloween. Now I thought about doing Poltergeist when I was thinking about doing
one
because
I'm gonna watch both. Is that
no? I mean they can if they want,
right.
But they don't have to.
Okay.
We're gonna do $15 a car. Theater's gonna have the rights on the ground to sell popcorn and soda. Shawnee's gonna be able to sell beer. That's their take. I think it has potential. If it works, we're going to do it in the spring and summer and help fund the theater. You like the idea?
I do. I think that's a great idea, actually. I think they're fine films. No doubt about it. I mean,
is there anything you do? And is there anything beside Halloween that I consider?
Well, I think Poltergeist would make sense.
Poltergeist is because it's PG-13, right?
Yeah. In fact, 82. And they're both ghost movies, so you can kind of.
No,
play
actually,
off of that.
It's actually PG.
Yeah, it actually was PG.
There was no PG-13 until 84.
Hard to believe that movie's PG.
Trivia question. First movie released with a PG-13 rating. What was it?
We've talked about this a million times.
Yeah.
Red Dawn.
It was.
Yes.
And what two
Indiana
movies?
Indiana Jones and Gremlins spawned it.
Yes, very good.
I mean,
I just want to see if you're paying attention.
Well, you know, my memory's a little bit better than yours. We have about this quite
all
a
right.
bit.
Okay.
Chuck, a couple other bits of movie news before we get to Fast Five in our topic today. Did see that documentary. It looks like Ethan Hawke is going to make a documentary about Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward, which is pretty exciting stuff, actually. You don't see much about Paul Newman. You know, I've seen some Steve McQueen stuff.
You know, I thought of Paul Newman the other day. When I was in the grocery store and I saw Newman's Own salad dressing. It's still, you know, that's still very profitable.
Well, think about his great career in theaters, and then, of course, his IndyCar racing that he really got into, and then the philanthropist that he became.
Yeah.
He was married to Joanne Woodward forever. I think this is a great topic. I mean, they were married 50 years before he died. And Ethan Hawke's going to take the lead on that. That's pretty good stuff.
I'd watch it. I love Paul Newman.
Yeah, but, you know, I doubt you'd watch it because you don't watch anything anymore.
World's changing, Mike. Don't have the time.
Well, I will say one thing before we move forward, because I did want to bring up something that I did just watch, and Netflix just released a brand new documentary that'll take us back to 1986 and everyone back to 1986. It's called Challenger, The Final Flight, and it's a four-part, about four-hour documentary on Christopher McAuliffe and that faithful Challenger space shuttle crew that blew up in the sky so many years ago. Chuck, it is a fascinating film documentary. All the major players are there. And I just forgot and failed to realize the amount of blame that NASA had on what went wrong that day and how they totally botched the whole situation. And this poor lady who was a teacher, first citizen, basically.
Horrifying.
Just horrifying. You just think about, because I was a junior in high school watching it on TV when it happened.
You know,
the teacher was on board.
So I know.
You know, they brought the TVs into a lot of these classrooms. So it really.
Horrible. You realize after the fact the immense risk.
Yes.
People take when they go up in a shuttle like that. It's just, you never know.
What I couldn't get over feeling is if that happened today, you'd have the right blaming the left for the explosion. The
Probably.
Left blaming the right for the explosion.
Scary.
And it would have been, I told you we shouldn't have flew.
Actually, it's depressing. It's not scary. It's just depressing.
It is. And the fact that an event like that could take place not that long ago, Chuck, really 34 years ago, is not that long in the great history of this country.
Yeah.
And the unity that the tremendous loss the entire country felt, about seven people, yet 200,000 people are dying now, and we can't seem to scratch the surface on that same unity. But I would highly recommend this documentary. It's tough to watch sometimes. It's very sad, but it's quite uplifting at times as well.
Okay.
I forgot Peter Billingsley was ambassador for children in outer space. He was on site when it happened. So he's part of this. You remember he was back in the day,
sure.
His movie had just come out. He was doing Real People, and he was the ambassador for kids to try to eventually get into the space. And he's part of it. It's just, there's a lot of good stuff to it, and it's just hard to believe what went wrong that day. But it's called Challenger Final Flight, and it's on Netflix right now, so I would highly, highly recommend it for people online. And then I'll let you know how Annabella reacts to Poltergeist, which I haven't watched in quite some time, so I'm really excited to watch, Chuck. All right, so Fast Five here. We're going to go back. Couple people that died way too young I wanted to get to, Chuck. We'll start. The TV role is easy for John Ritter. I would say Jack Tripper is maybe one of the best TV characters of all time, next to Louis De Palma. Those two are maybe the two best characters ever.
You know, it's interesting because on my other radio spot, I was talking about his birthday, which is why we do this. And I was reflecting and realizing that when you watch Three's Company, if you grew up on a show like Three's Company, before Seinfeld, it really was a show about nothing that was highly effective.
Yes.
Right? And they basically redid the same plot lines over and over and over and over, and it always worked.
Yeah, sexual misunderstandings.
Yes, completely. And what was interesting about Three's Company in retrospective is that they had the original cast, right?
Mm-hmm.
Suzanne Somers, obviously, was a major player. Christy Snow, her character.
Yep.
She felt the ratings were millions and millions of people, you know, 40, I don't know, in that day, probably 50 million plus were watching
sure,
that show.
Sure, sure.
Right? Three networks, it aired on ABC.
Part of the great lineup of Happy Days, and it was all part of that.
So here's the thing. She felt she was the focal part of the show, demanded big money. ABC said, no, we're not going to pay you. She leaves. They get basically a new cast. Ultimately, get a new cast. Ritter stays. Joyce DeWitt stays.
The Ropers leave.
Susan Somerville, they bring in Priscilla Barnes, and they bring in Jenny Lee Harrison, and the show to me, and they bring in Don Knotts,
Don
Mr.
Knotts
Farley,
is the key. Yeah,
right?
Don
and Knotts. Here's the thing, with the new cast, the show was just as good, if not better.
Yeah,
I thought it worked really
absolutely. Well, Don Knotts was
really good.
Put it over the top.
Yeah, I mean Norman Fell was really good too, and his wife as the Ropers,
he was
were really good. But
let's face it, without John Ritter. And I'd give Joyce DeWitt some credit too, because there's a lot of heart between those two characters.
He was really good.
He was the Dick Van Dyke of the 70s. He was He was that guy. He died
way too
young.
And then he did a movie called Hero at Large with Ann Archer, right?
That was my next question. He never really translated much to the big screen.
He was a really interesting character in the movie Sling Blade, too.
Sling Blade,
right?
He's great. He should have gotten an Academy.
He certainly had talent, but a very likable guy. Obviously, he passed away, you know, in a bad way, heart aneurysm, and as a big lawsuit, and his family thought he could have been saved. But I liked him.
Great. I was heartbroken when he died. He's actually 4 years older than me when he died. He was 54 when he died. And who can forget the classic Problem Child movies, Chuck, which I know you're a big fan of?
They were not critically acclaimed, but they made money.
They did make money. And it's funny.
And that kid was annoying.
Yeah, that kid was really annoying. And I guess that was the point, right?
Yeah, I know.
Morph into our next actor because he was actually in Problem Child inexplicably. But Jack Warden died at 85 back in 2006. He would have been 100 years old this weekend. He's one of my favorite character actors of all time. For me, I think Jack Warden, there's two things. The Twilight Zone episode when he's on.
You set me up here. You know that, right?
Yeah, the Twilight Zone episode. And I love him in Heaven Can Wait, which he...
Yeah, he's really good in Heaven Can Wait. What about playing the blind man in an upside-down ship? And Beyond... Adventure? Yeah, you set me up beautifully. So we got our Beyond the Poseidon Adventure reference in legitimately on this episode.
Unbelievable.
Let me ask you a question. How did the screenwriters write a blind man in an upside-down ship? I'm serious.
Not only that, Chuck.
Holy smoke.
But he survives, yet Carl Malone can't.
Yeah, well, Shirley Knight, who plays his wife, dies in the film. She drowns, right? She goes in that ladder scene when the Michael Caine, when Irwin Allen said, just fall off the ladder, no reason. Okay, she drowns, and then Jack Warden, basically falls in love with Shirley Jones very quick. It's just
when you're blind, let's face it, they're not that different.
No, but only in the 70s can you meet and fall in love in a 2-hour running time.
In all seriousness, though, the guy, I mean, over 60 years of great work, obviously.
Yeah.
And you remember that Twilight Zone episode I'm talking about, right? When they put the woman on the planet with him and he's all by himself. He's there in jail.
He's also, if you remember, and I talked to my daughter about this episode of the Twilight Zone. He was in the one where the pitcher was a robot and he struck everybody out. And then they put a heart. They gave him a medical test. They put a heart in him. And when he had heart, he felt bad competing against the other players.
Kind of like Steven Matz.
He played the manager.
Yeah, kind of like Steven Matz, right?
Right. He played the manager.
Also, you know, he's nominated twice for an Academy Award.
Wasn't he on the Bad News Bears TV show?
Yes, he was.
Right?
He was.
He was a manager.
He also was nominated for Shampoo. And don't forget, he was Crazy Like a Fox, too. He had that TV series. And another great TV role, he's the coach in Brian's Song, too. He's also guy's done so much great work of The Verdict. Oh my God, he's really good.
I love The Verdict.
Yeah, he's really good.
If Paul Newman's amazing career, it might be my favorite Paul Newman role.
But to tell you the truth, I remember the one Jack Warden role that more than anything else, for some reason, one of his last roles is the Robert De Niro movie Night in the City. Where Robert De Niro tries to be a boxing promoter, and he gets Jack Warden, who's Alan King's dad. And the guy, Jack Warden, is so good in that film. Is one of his last roles, Night in the City. What's her name's in that, too? Jessica Lange co-stars with Robert De Niro. Little scene movie, but a very good one. I think this one's going to be easy for you, but maybe not. Jeremy Irons is 72 this weekend. You're going to go
he's
Alfred?
Really good. No, he's... I thought he was really interesting as Alfred, to be honest with you. I would have liked to see him a lot more as Alfred in Universe with Ben Affleck as Batman. He did a Cronenberg movie called Dead Ringers.
Yeah.
Man, he's really good in that film. He's a really interesting villain in Die Hard with a Vengeance. He's good, right?
And he's very good villain in The Lion King, too. Let's not forget, he's the voice of Scar, Chuck.
He's got one of those majestic – his line readings in Die Hard with a Vengeance are awesome.
Well, two more to go. Another one, an iconic TV role, but he's done some great work on screen. Believe it or not, James Gandolfini would have only been 59 years old this weekend. Gandolfini, obviously, Tony Soprano on TV.
Obviously, that's it. But you know what? I really like when he played a little, he played a tweaked his villainous persona when he did The Last Castle with Robert Redford.
Oh, he's good in that.
I like that movie. Mike, that movie's That's directed by Rod Laurie, who is a former film critic for, I believe, the LA Times, right? And that movie came out right after 9/11, and they had to digitally, because the flag was hung upside down, and they felt that was offensive, and they had to digitally realter that. And a lot of people didn't see it because people weren't going to the movies after 9/11 initially that much. I like that movie a lot.
Well, that was one of those movies we talked about last week when we were going through the 9/11 movies that, you know, got affected by the release. I also thought,
and I really liked it.
I thought he was very good in Get Shorty too, as Bear, the hitman that eventually.
And he's pretty menacing in 8mm.
Oh, 8mm and True Romance. Remember, he's the one that Patricia Arquette beats the crap out of at the very end. Yeah. I'm going to give you a choice in the last one, Chuck.
Go ahead.
Two very appealing actors on screen every time they're in a movie or a TV show. I like them. You choose James Marsden or Kyle Chandler.
I'll go with Kyle Chandler. I like Marsden too, but Friday Night Lights, the TV show. I felt that show was pretty iconic.
55 years old, by the way. And he's very good as the dad in Super 8 too. I'm kind of partial to that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess he's got that signature TV role. A lot of TV role guys.
Yeah, but I mean, Friday Night Lights, never heavily viewed by audiences, but man, what a quality show. And he was
something about him, really good, Chuck, every time he's in a movie, something about him, it just, he's got a tremendous amount of screen presence, even though he's never really been the main star.
He's got an interesting voice too.
He had a great voice, great look, but he's never been a star that's going to carry a movie and take it to the next level.
Yeah.
I like him a lot, and I'd like him to, he's also great in a little movie called The Spectacular Now, which I'm a big fan of too.
Okay.
He's not in it a lot. That's a Miles Teller, Shailene Woodley.
All right. Team. Yep. Sure.
And real quick on James Marsden, again, always appealing on screen.
He's going to play the Gary Sinise role
in the stand
redo with CBS All-Access. Stu Redman, the character, right?
He's going to be one of those guys, Chuck, if he isn't already, like Jason Bateman.
Sonic the Hedgehog. Yeah.
Yep, Sonic. He's actually appealing in that, too.
Yeah, I mean, he did it for – listen, and, you know, he was played a big part in Superman Lives, right? Returns? What? Yes. Superman Returns.
Returns. He played the general, right? He played the she falls in love with. He's one of those guys that as soon as he's on – is there – like you could never walk into somebody and say, I never liked that guy. Every time he's in a movie, I can't stand him. It's the opposite. He's in a movie. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah.
Agreed.
That guy's always going to add something. He's got a very likable appeal to him.
He's again, in Hairspray, too.
Yes, yes. Again, you know, like Paul Rudd, Jason Bateman, James Marsden, you cast him in any one of your movies, you automatic likability as soon as they get on screen. You're not going to offend anybody when you do
True.
That. All right, Chuck, let's talk about the greatest sports winter movies of all time, ice hockey films, figure skating films. I even have a luge film in my top five, Chuck, of the 10 best movies that take place cold on ice, sports movies, that is, Chuck. So I'm going to give you my – this is really more than 10 through 6.
I have five. I have five, but go ahead. You expand.
Right. No, I put two comedies back-to-back, and you tell me at number 10, Hot Dog the Movie and Better Off Dead, both ski movies, both very stupid, but somehow, some way, both very, very watchable on repeat viewing as well. Remember Better Off Dead, John Cusack.
Listen, those are movies that were made in a marketplace – where there was a lot more accessibility, a lot more tolerance for a product that wasn't going to blow. People knew going in, you weren't going to be blown away, but you were going to be entertained, right? And those movies fit that bill.
And for some reason, Hot Dog the Movie, you can't make that movie now.
No.
And Shannon Tweed, you add a Playboy Playmate to it. Somehow it's David Naughton's second best film. It's hard to believe. I put two James Bond movies in my top 10.
Really?
Yeah, For Your Eyes Only and On Her Majesty's Secret Service, because you remember, For Your Eyes Only, a lot of skiing in that. In fact, Lee Holly Johnson is in the movie as well. She's the ice skater from Ice Castles.
Okay.
And On Her Majesty's Secret Service, the big chase scene at the end is in the luge. That's with George Lansby. So I put two Bond movies there, although he does some skiing in Spy Who Loved Me Too. He skis a lot, this James Bond, although – Roger Moore's stunt double did most of the skiing.
In A View to a Kill, he skis too.
Yeah, well, again, right? Yeah, and I think he skis with Pierce Brosnan one.
How did Roger Moore do all that skiing?
I don't know. He's a great skier. How he wasn't in the Olympics was beyond me. I also put Abbott and Costello Hit the Ice, one of the first.
Boy, you're really digging deep.
Well, you know what? I remembered that movie growing up. I'm like, wait a minute. And yes, there's ice skating in that one, obviously. And you got to throw Abbott and Costello in there. There's always Hit the Ice, obviously Meets Frankenstein.
Right.
Mummy. There's those certain titles that you just remember that just – Abbott and Costello. I wish you can't really find those movies anywhere, Chuck. Where do I watch an Abbott and Costello movie now? Why isn't the streaming service anybody picking up?
That's a good question.
I also put, and we'll talk about A Miracle later on, but I also put the TV version of the classic 1918 Miracle on Ice that had Carl Malden as Herb Brooks back in the day, Chuck. I did. Steve Guttenberg was also on that team as well. I actually remember watching that movie. It came out in a relatively fast time after the miracle actually happened. So that's a great TV movie you want to get a chance to see. And all due respect to the entire Mighty Ducks pantheon of films, I actually think D2 is the best of the Mighty Ducks movies, Chuck. And I put that in my number six. That, of course, has Emilio Estevez and the gang returning in some prep school or something like that. Who the hell knows? But it's got Joshua Jackson in, and they win the game at the end, and it's a heck of a lot of fun. For some reason, those movies aren't as bad as they should be. So there you go. I've got Hot Dog the Movie, Better Off Dead, For Your Eyes Only on Her Majesty's Secret Service, Hit the Ice, Miracle on Ice, and D2 to Mighty Ducks. How'd I do so far?
Very good. So the two Bond movies, theoretically, they're not sports movies.
No, but they're sports on – they do take place. Like, the figure skating is heavily involved with For Your Eyes Only.
I just want to bring up one – I didn't do a 10 through 6, but I do want to bring up one that's not sports-related, but it has some snowboard – and I'm always fascinated by the film, and it's the movie Alive from '93.
Oh, what a great movie!
Right, and Ethan Hawke has a really good cast, and it's directed by Frank Marshall, who worked with Spielberg and produced a lot of Spielberg's Amblin stuff. And
he did Congo too.
Oh, I hate Congo.
Yeah,
I do. Congo's awful. But having said that, there's something about Alive that has like a fun feel to it with an absolutely morbid subject. Right, it's about a rugby team that crashes in the Andes, and they have to do. Ultimately, you know, it's based on a true event, and resort to cannibalism to survive. Yeah. And it was a really weird way that they marketed that film, and a lot of news stories about it. But it has an adventure feel.
Great ending too. Great ending.
Yeah. And I really like that movie.
Yeah, I did like that movie a lot too. It almost plays like Dead Poets Society on a mountain.
Yeah, it's a concoction of different things with a very, very, very serious undertone.
So but soccer's not a winter sport, although they were stuck in a winter situation. So
yes,
it's a bit of a reach for you. So you didn't dive as deep as I did into these movies.
I mean, I could have said Cliffhanger, but it's not a sports movie. It's an ice movie.
Some would
say Day After Tomorrow. A lot of ice in that film.
Yeah, there's
you know
ice.
I got to tell you,
we want to stick with the sports.
One of my all-time favorite movies. I love 30 Days a Night that takes place in snow, Alaska. I love that. I just wanted to throw that out there. Now we'll go back to sports stuff.
Well, now I'm sure Ice Castles is on your list, the soft guy that you are. You know, and the other side of the mountain. Those are two big.
Let me just – I'll talk about my number five. Number five, I did say the Mighty Ducks. I remember going – you know, it's hard to believe. 92? 90 Ducks? Holy smoke. I remember going – I used to go to movies a lot by myself. I did.
Gordon Bombay, right?
And you know, you don't really have high expectations. All you want to do is be entertained. But like there's always something about that underdog coach, in this case, Emilio Estevez, who was always likable on film.
Yeah.
You know, I always wonder, like I say to myself like, about guys like Emilio Estevez, he directed a few movies in the last 20 years. But I say to myself, very likable guy, you know, Martin Sheen's son, Charlie Sheen's brother, had a little bit of a run of success, was in St. Elmo's Fire and Judgment Night, and he did the Mighty Duck movies. But like, what does he do like over the last 20 years? Like, how does he make a living?
He was directing a few movies.
He did a couple. I know. He did movie Bobby, right?
Yeah, he did Bobby. I know he did a He did a movie about, I think, a New York City public library gets taken hostage or like that, something like that, most recently. But, yeah, he did a lot of directorial stuff. I always found him more appealing than Charlie, to be honest with you. Always found him more appealing than Charlie.
He's likable.
He's very likable.
He's very likable.
Good as Gordon Bombay. Let's face it. It was good casting.
No, it is. And this is the definition, like Mighty Ducks, right? It's the definition of formula.
Yeah.
You know what? It's exact. It follows a recipe. The endings always work. The underdog team, it's fun.
Yeah, and you know, the big score at the end. And you know, it's always fun to watch it now. You'll see Joshua Jackson very young.
So you think, like, when they're writing a screenplay to the Mighty Ducks, they're doing a blueprint of the Bad News Bears to a point?
To a point. I mean, it's a lot light and fluffy. It is a
Disney
movie.
Yeah, agree. But the formula.
The formula works. Let's face it.
It does work.
You know, and then you got Joshua Jackson popping up. Remember, Jussie Smollett's in the first one, too, and God knows what he turned into later on. But there's a lot of recognizable – these kids are like, oh, yeah, these kids are growing up on screen, and I think it's very appealing. I actually like the second one better than the first one, but, you know, don't forget about D3. He came back for that. And a lot of these movies, Chuck, you know, you wonder what he's doing now. He's living off the paychecks he got
from coming back. And they're going to do Disney Plus is going to do Mighty Ducks TV show. He's coming back.
Good for him. Yeah. He never shied away from doing these movies. And that's the one thing, you know, other actors probably would have been, I don't really want to talk about it.
Yeah.
I respect him for that because there's a tremendous audience.
I tell you, not necessarily Emilio Estevez, but he'd be a good subject. I would love to see a documentary of once you hit a little and then you sort of vaporize from the public eye, like what have you done the last 20 years? I think it's a good subject.
I agree, respectively.
It's a good subject. I think I would be really interested in knowing.
Well, and the funny thing is, I'm sure Lionsgate would love to cast him in one of these Nicolas Cage movies as well. So he could easily get work, I would think, right?
I don't see why not.
Chuck, I'm going to go to Downhill Skiing as my number five, a movie I caught on video maybe about 3 years ago, and I was astonished at how much it affected me. The real life story of Eddie Edwards, the British underdog ski jumper who won at the 1988 Winter Olympics. Hugh Jackman's in it. It's called Eddie the Eagle.
Right.
I really love this film, Chuck, with Taron Egerton playing Eddie Edwards, unrecognizable. Taron Egerton. He's so good in this film, Chuck. You talk about Rocky scripts. There's another one about a down and out, you know, trainer, Hugh Jackman, an underdog skier, Taron Egerton. The music swells at the end. He makes the big jump. I mean, it's such a heartwarming film led by two really great actors that we know in a movie that a lot of people probably don't know. It's called Eddie the Eagle. It's not, you know, you wouldn't think you'd get a great movie out of a ski jumper, but it really is a great movie, and I'd highly recommend Eddie the Eagle. And Taron Egerton is so good in the lead here, Chuck. I'm not sure if you ever got a chance to see it.
I got to be honest. I know of it, of course. I'd never seen it in its entirety. I've seen bits and pieces on cable.
It's so good, and this is one of the reasons why I'm glad we're doing a topic like this where I can talk about a movie like this that I'm sure people just go search it out. You'll find it. It's very good. So that's
good pick.
That's my number five.
My number four. I went with I, Tonya because it's only a few years old, but I really like that film. I thought Margot Robbie playing it down in terms of looks is Tonya Harding. No insult to Tonya, but she it shows she's a really good actress. You wouldn't believe this movie's true unless you knew it was true. I mean, it's almost hard to believe. And it's interesting because when Tonya Harding's doing interviews with Margot Robbie side by side, and like, you know, they're laughing with each other, and I guess there's a reason for everything, but it's hard to believe you could redeem yourself with some of the stuff that, you know, she was involved in, although the movie shows she didn't know about a lot of it. Who knows? Having said that, it's one of the first times I saw Paul
Walter Hauser.
Yeah, who played Richard Jewell in the Clint Eastwood movie, done a fantastic. He should have been nominated for an Oscar for that.
Yeah, he's
film,
really
Mike.
Good in that.
He's so good.
How about his funny turn in Cobra Kai? I did not expect him to pop up on that series.
Yeah, he's really funny.
He's very. I mean, look, he plays like a one trick pony right now.
He does. It's a good one trick pony though.
And how great is Allison Janney, who got the Academy Award in that? She's so good as
good
her
film.
Mom. It's really good. And Avenger fans are happy to see Sebastian Stan as well.
Yep.
You know, he's the boyfriend in that.
Yeah.
I like that. I had some problems with it. It almost played too much for satire instead of what really happened, but she's very good in it. I did like it. It almost made my list, but came up short. Now, I gotta believe my number four is on your list because it happens to be one of our favorite Die Hard and a Blank movies, and that is Sudden Death at number four, which pits Jean-Claude Van Damme on the ice in goal during the seventh game of the Stanley Cup Finals, Chuck. I mean, it doesn't get more ice hockey than
that. It does. I didn't put it on my top five only because I didn't think of it. But I love that film.
And
interesting. He does Van Damme does Time Cop. It's his biggest hit, right?
Yep.
Then he has about a year later, Sudden Death comes out, and nobody goes to see it. And the movie's just as good, if not better, than Time. If you like that genre,
yep.
And you like Van Damme, it's an excellent
movie. I would
movie.
Venture to say, outside of Speed, Chuck, which is kind of that genre,
yeah.
This is the second best, and The Rock kind of is too. But on this tier, it doesn't get much better than an action movie with...
No, when he's fighting the mascot, what a great scene.
I mean, it's such a good scene. And you know what's funny is Rod...
It
has heart. Siskel and Ebert actually gave it two thumbs up as well.
It deserved it.
It deserved it. And a lot of the credit goes to Peter Hyams, who's a great... He's a professional director.
Right, he did a good job.
He did a really good job. And Powers Booth is the villain. But, you know, I put it on my list of number four because without...
The movie's well shot.
It's well shot. Scope.
It's really well. Van Damme's likable. It's got a good villain. And it's got a good storyline. Makes it a good, real good movie.
I mean, the only flaw... He did catch the Fast and the Furious checks, though. So
he did.
He did do that.
He did.
But, you know, Miracle's got a great score. And again, Gavin O'Connor...
Yeah.
A tremendous force in the business, if you ask me, Chuck, because you talk about the way back.
Here's a trivia question for you. What's the name of the character Kurt Russell plays in Poseidon?
I have no idea.
Robert Ramsey.
Oh, yeah, of course. Mayor Robert Ramsey.
And firefighter of New York City.
How could I forget that? Was he blind? No, he wasn't blind.
No.
He could see.
He was a harsh, very conservative man, though.
I will tell you this. He's got a great end scene. I will say that. It was very effective. What happened to that character? I'll give you that.
Boy, I wish I had access to that screenplay. If I had Kurt Russell in that movie, I would have really fleshed things out in a totally different way. But it is what it is.
And it was interesting, too. Like, you know, all due respect to Josh Lucas. Mm-hmm. You're going to anchor a movie like that. It should be anchored by Kurt Russell, not Josh Lucas.
Well, it's like there's two alpha. Well, it's two alpha males when it should be a little bit of an adversary. Although, you know, Hackman and Borgnine were both technically good people. Borgnine challenged Hackman's character so much, and he gave that movie a lot of fuel.
Yeah.
And Poseidon, they're basically the same side of the same coin.
Well, I know Wolfgang Peterson was probably trying to accomplish that same magic.
Yeah, it didn't work. That part didn't work.
It didn't work. But we get way off the target. Miracle is my favorite. And the scene where he makes those guys do the sprints again and again and again after they lose that game. Oh, it's so good, Chuck. It's such a great movie. And I'm sure, you know, my next movie at number three, a lot of these movies have something in common, and that's Disney movies. A lot of Disney movies popping up here. And I got to tell you, when I saw John Candy starring in a Disney movie based on a Jamaican bobsled team, I did not expect to like it as much as I did. But Cool Runnings, you know, you think you're going to get a goofy comedy with these guys trying to learn how to bobsled. What ends up happening is you fall in love with all these characters, including John Candy. And the end is so effective when they actually get to the Olympics that you forget how hard their road must have been.
Here's the thing about John Candy. He actually could act.
Yes.
He's a good actor.
He's good.
He did a movie. I remember going to a movie in the 90s called Only the Lonely.
Yeah, great movie.
Right? And I sat there and watched that movie, and I was like, wow, this is a really good movie.
Yeah,
and he was really good in that movie. His acting chops, he could act.
And I think he showed that same kind of character in Cool Runnings as well. I think
a
lot of times his weight would get in the way. You're thinking, oh, it's going to be an Uncle Buck type. Here's Uncle Buck teaching the bobsled.
For the record, I don't like Uncle Buck.
Now, I'm not a huge fan of the movie.
I find that movie, I do not like that character.
Well, I did like his character in Cool Runnings a lot.
I do too.
The ending was very effective too. He didn't make too many movies after that either, Chuck. So it was really the pinnacle of his career.
Cash Register.
It made a ton of money, and he did a very good job in that film. So Cool Runnings is on my list, Chuck, and it's coming in at a cool number three.
Here's my number two, Mike. How about we go back to 1992? Hard to believe. I saw this in a movie theater. I just watched it a few years ago. Somebody did a private screening of it, and I sat in. How about The Cutting Edge?
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
No? See, I do.
So
overrated. Here's the thing.
Overrated.
No, I like the movie. It's very
bad.
Enjoyable. It's a
Maura Kelly cannot act. I'm sorry.
Okay, let me tell you about Maura Kelly.
Okay,
if you can't get Winona Ryder in the '90s, who do you call? Maura Kelly?
Samantha Mathis.
Anyway,
Put a call into
spoiled, stuck-up rich girl, figure skater meets regular hockey player.
Right.
Who helps train her to skate. Played by D.B. Sweeney.
I like D.B. Sweeney.
They butt heads the whole movie, but there's a chemistry. I like their chemistry, and I enjoy the heck out of this film.
Yeah, and you weren't alone.
Mike, it has a following.
I know. You weren't alone. It made a ton of money. And
made money, and it's still popular. People like this movie. They seek it out.
How about you have your daughter watch this one? I believe they made a sequel.
Yeah, not with the cast, though.
No. But evidence that Maura Kelly can act.
Why do you say she can't act? Tell me.
She's got zero screen presence. She can barely read her lines. How was her? Let me ask you.
Agree.
How was her career after that?
Well, she did. She did. She had a. She did. She did West Wing.
Yeah. Okay.
She did One Tree Hill for a long time.
Oh.
All
right. And how about D.B. Sweeney? Why didn't he ever take off? I like him a lot, by the way. I don't know why. You know, I don't have.
It's interesting. He's worked though.
Yeah.
He's worked. He's done a lot of work. Became a household name. I agree with you.
He is definitely one of the eight men out, right?
He was on 24 too for a
little
while.
Yeah, he was on 24 for a little bit.
He's done a lot of different things.
He was actually the main character in Fire in the Sky too.
Well, yes, he was. So why go by your initials?
I don't know.
Why?
I don't know. Maybe he was a big fan of G.W. Bailey. I'm not sure. Right.
But I like The Cutting Edge. I'm on record. I twice my number
You're
two.
You're not alone, Chuck.
I enjoy this movie a
You're
lot.
You're not alone. You're not alone. I will give you that.
And again, that's a 92. I could go to a movie theater with no expectations, have no idea what I'm going to see, you know, not crazy marketing.
Right.
And I could sit down and be surprised and be entertained by just two characters connecting. There's nothing wrong with that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, I think there's a was that he was a hockey player, then could play. He was a bruiser, right? And he got banned from the league or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. No, now he's teaching her how to skate.
Here's a trivia question.
Directed and she resists. She resists.
It's not easy.
But they connect.
It's a rock. It's like Romeo
good.
And Juliet.
Yes, very much so.
Directed by. Trivia question.
Don't remember.
Paul. Michael Glazer.
Okay.
Yeah.
What other big movie did he direct?
He did The Running Man.
He did The Running Man. Yes. Yeah. I like The Running Man a lot. Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yep.
Jesse the Body.
He was my favorite. I always liked Starsky better than Hux.
Yapit Kodo.
Yes.
Maria Conchita Alonso.
Oh, my God. The talent's just.
Now, Maria Conchita Alonso, I know we're veering here.
This is a veer. This is a turn. This is a U-turn against the light right now.
What an interesting presence, huh?
Is that that sentence might have never been uttered by any other podcast ever?
All right,
Peter Alonso. What an interesting presence.
Yes.
Interesting casting for that movie. I will give you that. How about that?
All right.
My number two, Chuck, might be your number one. I don't know, but I did not expect much out of Slapshot the first time I saw it when I was really
my number one.
It's hysterical. It's got great hockey in it. And who would have thought to cast Paul Newman in this
movie? I'm going to tell you, that's a good question. Why do you think Paul Newman was cast in that movie? I'll tell you why.
I think he wanted to change his image a little bit, I would think.
No,
right?
He was directed by George Roy Hill,
yep.
Who did Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, and he did The Sting.
Yep.
Two iconic films with Paul Newman, I'm sure. He gave Newman a call. He said, listen, I got this really interesting script. It's a hard R comedy. It's something different. I want you. And let me tell you, it was a good choice by Newman when you watch that movie, the first thing you say is, boy, this is really different from Paul Newman.
Exactly.
Right? Boy, this is really hard R.
Exactly.
Boy, this is funny as anything.
And boy,
and it's highly entertaining. There's two films in this period which the audience got. These are two films that were really the first audience participation movies where you're yelling back at the screen. Longest Yard.
Yep.
Burt Reynolds, right? That was 76 or 73.
Longest Yard 73, I believe.
73, right? Okay. And then you get Slapshot in 77. And they're both really good.
And then, obviously, you got the Hanson brothers that put this thing over the top. And make it, you know, iconic for all time.
And here's the thing. The scripting in this movie and the direction and the timing of it made that comedy funny.
Very funny. And
those
then
Hanson brothers were awesome in that film.
Just hysterical. And then, of course, you know, Michael Ancine is
he's really likable.
And, of course, old-time hockey. It's a really just iconic stuff. This is a Caddyshack on Ice a little bit, but
it it's minor league hockey, and it deals with the grueling aspect of what these players go to, you know, because they love the sport and they're trying to eventually get to, you know, the NHL. Probably never going to happen, but it's a good movie.
There's definitely a dark overtone to the entire film of it borderlines on this is really sad, too, what these guys have to.
Yes, because it deals with their relationships and
their wives.
It's pretty gritty.
And if fans of A Christmas Story will end up watching it and go, oh, my God, is that the mom in A Christmas Story? Because Melinda Dillon has quite a scene in that film.
You know, it's interesting. You brought up via text you were watching a Tom Cruise movie. With
All the Right Moves, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Sort of. The feel is a little the same.
Similar, you know, rundown towns.
Yes.
Trying to find a
gritty realism to it.
Yeah. And I actually just most recently, Close Encounters of the Third Kind popped up on Amazon Prime. So I wanted to watch it in 4K and I got the chance to watch it again. And it's as great as ever. You see the Melinda Dillon, who's in Slapshot, I just brought up. She's fantastic in it as well. That movie, for some reason, Chuck, it's so slow paced. It's the slowest paced movie that goes fast in 2 hours that I've ever seen. It's so engrossing as far as that lead character, Richard Dreyfuss. And again, not a ice movie in sports. I just wanted to bring it up, but I did recently watch it. If you have Amazon Prime, it is 4K. And the scene where he just says, "Who are you people?" I mean, is there a better line reading than when he's confronting those two guys in the government saying, "What's going on here? Who are you people?"
Okay, here's it. I believe Phantom Events is going to re-release it once again in the theaters. I love Close Encounters. I, believe it or not, did not see this originally theatrically. I did a revival of it about 4 years ago, and I screened a couple of different cuts of the film. Yep. And I'm a big fan. Here's a trivia question about Close Encounters. Do you know who Spielberg originally wanted as the lead, but ultimately said no because he refused or he didn't want to cry on camera?
Oof.
Big name, Mike. Big name.
Didn't want to cry. Stallone.
It was Steve McQueen.
Wow. Wow.
Can you see Steve McQueen in that role?
I can't. He's not every man enough. He's too good looking.
And Close Encounters was 1980, right?
E.T. was 80. Close Encounters was 77.
Okay, yeah, 77. So it's 3 years after Towering Inferno. Would have been a different film.
He's too good looking.
It would have been a different film.
You needed a guy, Richard Dreyfuss, that looked like a lineman that would go out and fix your electric, you know?
Well, you know, talking of Richard Dreyfuss, I know we're veering into different, but this is interesting. When they were casting for Total Recall, Paul Verhoeven's Total Recall, Arnold ultimately got the role of Quaid. Two actors that they heavily looked at. One was Richard Dreyfuss because they wanted it in the book. It's an everyday guy, right? And they also looked at Patrick Swayze. But ultimately, Arnold got the film as an action vehicle. And I always thought Arnold was never better than in Total Recall.
Yeah, he's really good in that.
He's so likable.
I don't know if, I mean, never better though. I mean, come on.
Well, I mean, likability. Kindergarten Cop 2. But, you know, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I got you.
Did we mention Beyond the Poseidon Adventure this episode?
We did. Jack Warden. We did.
So Slapshot is my number one.
All right, let's go through 5 through 1 real quick. Go ahead. You do yours real quick, and then I'll do mine.
Number 5, Mighty Ducks. Number 4, I, Tonya. Number 3, Miracle. Number 2, Cutting Edge. Number 1, Slapshot.
Eddie the Eagle's my number five. Sudden Death at my number four, which astonished me.
Good, not good about. Honestly, it just was out of my memory bank for a half an hour.
Number three.
I apologize.
I mean,
listening audience.
Trust me, if the ice would have froze up on the Poseidon, this would have been on his list, I'm sure. Cool Runnings, my number three. Two, Slapshot. One, Miracle. And most of these movies you can catch on streaming everywhere.
Yes. Does that mean I should have put Titanic on my list?
Hidden Iceberg. There's a lot of ice. A lot of ice in that. By the way, Titanic probably would not have hit the criteria needed today for the Academy Award for Best
Picture. It's funny. I was watching, before we go, you know how I watch trailers. And I was talking to you about The Postman, and I watched The Postman. Yeah. I am The Postman, by the way.
Good for you. I was watching
a 3-minute interview with the author of the novel The Postman, and he was talking about the film, and he admitted it was a misfire, but he said that Costner sent everybody on The Postman before it came out an email, and he said, "We got a box office hit here because our only competition for this Christmas season is this movie about the Titanic, and we should easily outperform it."
Wow. It only becomes maybe the second greatest movie of all time.
Costner's projection was a little bit off.
Little off there. Yeah. Well, so was the movie. It was a little off.
No, but I am The Postman. I just want to say.
All right. Well, let's wrap things up there on that note. We'll do this all over again next week, my friend.
Always a pleasure, Mike.
Thanks for listening to Movie Maniacs. Download one of our archived episodes. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts.
Podcasts by Federated Media. Podcasts by Federated Media.